No, no, not yet. Not till me and Harvey get the rules straightened out.
Rules? In a knife fight? No rules!
Well, if there ain't gonna be any rules, let's get the fight started. Someone count 1, 2, 3, go.
1, 2, 3, go.
I was really rooting for you, Butch.
You're listening to The Hollywood Saloon.
Who are those guys?
Everybody, welcome to episode number 6 of the Hollywood Saloon. I'm Andy, and with me, of course, is the master himself, John Jansen.
Hello, hello.
And this is kind of a special edition. We both went and saw Serenity today, and now we're going to talk about it, I guess, like everyone else, you know, out there. But we'll put our different spin on it. But from what I saw it this morning, September 30th, and I know that you just got back from seeing it, and how are we going to start?
Well, why don't you kick off? You saw it first. Give me your first impressions.
All right. Now, I got to tell you ahead of time, and if y'all have listened to the podcast in the past, you know that I've been a little bit biased. You know, I'm a little brown Cody, if you will. Okay, got that fan thing going on there. I've been a fan of Firefly for a long time. Well, not a long time. I guess I've had the DVD set for 2-3 months. Just kind of found it by accident, went in there and watched it, really liked it, really have been looking forward to this film. So I had raised expectations, but I went in spoiler-free, which is very unusual for me because I usually know everything about a movie that I'm really looking forward to before I go in.
Yeah, I was spoiler-free and trailer-free.
You were trailer-free, which is very nice. I couldn't withhold. I saw the trailers. But anyways, okay, cut to the chase. I don't know what to say other than I really, really, really like this movie. you know, when I came home and looked at my wife, I just made a face because I didn't really know what to say. It's kind of like after seeing an early Star Wars film in that it's just kind of rushed past me. All I did was kind of just jump on for the ride and ride it. And I think it has everything to do with the fact that I had seen the series and knew the series of Firefly very well. Not to say that other people wouldn't enjoy the movie who haven't seen it, but if you have seen the series, man, it pays off in big, big numbers here because you're going to feel the highs and you're going to feel the lows. But that's my quick point of view. What about you?
Well, I'm coming off very fresh, and I found myself when I was thinking about, you know, how we were going to approach this show, is there's really two different perspectives of reviewing this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, one is coming from someone that has seen all the episodes and then sees where this movie picks off and continues on, and the other is from someone that hasn't seen any of it and has to take this movie on its own merit. And I kind of want to talk about both tonight.
Right.
Because I think they're both very fair viewing perspectives that should be explored.
Well, the life of this movie is going to depend on the folks who haven't seen it. Obviously, all the people who are invested in Firefly are going to see this movie a multiple number of times because they want it to continue. They want this thing to become the next Star Trek. They want this thing to have a life. So that's an obvious thing. But a movie will live or die based on word of mouth, and this is that kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to rest in the hands of the non-initiated. As much as the Browncoats can push this thing, it's going to depend on how the regular folks do it. And, you know, for me and for you, since we've both seen the series and both enjoyed the series, that's hard to look at. But go ahead.
Well, no, it's in the first hurdle they already hurled. I mean, they either were going to make a good movie or it wasn't going to be good, and it's a good movie.
Yeah.
So that's the first hurdle. You know, coming at it from the perspective of someone that perhaps may have never seen any Firefly episodes, there are some elements that I found lacking, and that was mainly the setup of the Alliance. We didn't really ever get to really see who was behind. You know?
Right.
And the series always did a good job at least showing you their headquarters out in space or their ship and sort of how it works. Just to let you know who's running the universe, per se.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I want to give a real nice tip of the hat from just the opening of the movie. A great, great screenwriting device was used to open it up inside a little history lesson that pulled out to a classroom that became a memory that became a video clip as we introduced the villain watching the video clip to get background on his prey.
Right.
That is good screenwriting.
That was fantastic. And for those that know about River Tam and know about how Simon broke her out of the Blue Sun facility, the Alliance facility. I think that is such a big scene because we never saw that before.
And, absolutely.
And getting to see that is like, oh, we've heard this discussed about before, but now seeing it, I mean, it was akin to, and I'm going to take you off base here for 5 seconds, but you remember way back in Terminator 2 days when we wanted to see in Terminator 2, we wanted the whole thing to open with the original. You know, we wanted to see Kyle Reese being shoved
as
back.
As it was scripted.
As it was scripted.
Script.
Because we had that script. And that was the scene that we missed. But this mm-hmm. is the scene that we get to see. You know, it's been alluded to. We know that it happened. But actually seeing it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and I think for someone that hadn't seen Firefly, they get the nuggets that they need. You know, you get the idea that it's a brother rescuing a sister who's being obviously treated like a scientific experiment. And we also, again, it's a great introduction to the villain of the piece. And he's a great character, actually, for a new character, you know, being introduced. I think anyone that doesn't know Firefly at all would find his demeanor very fascinating
right.
and unusual in this type of genre picture. But, you know, carry on from there. You know, literally, the movie doesn't stop to really try and introduce everybody and even give you more tidbits on their backstory. It's just sort of full motion ahead, and we're right into another job that, you know, Malcolm Reynolds and his crew has to pull off. So there's really not a lot of time for someone that doesn't know Firefly. They just sort of have to hang on, and occasionally there's a little information, you know, dealt out. Now, it was great seeing the character Reverend Book, you know, of course. You know, we knew he would have to have an appearance.
Sure.
But I think for someone that's never seen Firefly, I don't think they're going to feel the weight of what his presence means in the film.
Right.
Only because, unfortunately, you know, this is always due to running time in movies, is there just wasn't enough room to do the book back, you know, to set Book up properly.
Right. Well, you know, I think something that's very interesting about this is that Firefly and Serenity really rub on each other, because I think what you're going to see happening here is people who haven't seen Firefly and who've seen this film are going to go back and want to see Firefly now.
Exactly. And then when they come back to this film for the second time, when it hits its DVD release eventually, they're going to have a different experience and probably a far richer and more rewarding one. But, you know, and then I don't want to, you know, sound too nitpicky. I want to cater to both perspectives.
Well, I think
for anyone out here listening to the podcast that doesn't know Firefly, you know, some of the things that they might, you know, what to expect. Now, one big plus I have to get out of the way real quick is great opening titles.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, man. And for,
now, that's
and
a good for, way to do your opening title, and, integrated into your picture.
Exactly. And for Firefly fans who have been away from this show for 2 years, to see Serenity come up and with the music and all, it was just, it was like a total geek moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And this film had it just in spades over and over again, just geek moments. It's like, oh, thank you, oh, thank you, thank you. We've been away from these characters for so long. Thank you for the refreshment of knowing these characters again, knowing the demeanor of their characters and everything, and getting back to that. You know, I it's hard, like I said, I think maybe you're better at it than I am, but if... I guess what I'm trying to push here is, yes, this is a great film that I think all people will enjoy, but if you have seen Firefly and taken part in this adventure, you are going to get so much out of it that's beyond just seeing it as a first time view.
Oh, sure. And the person coming in for the first time, they're going to get a really fun sci-fi action adventure.
Right.
And for something coming into something brand new, I can't think of anything in the last couple of years that just it reminds you what a good popcorn movie can be like, you know, with a little bit of substance, you know, thrown in on top. And so, you know, I think there is an audience for this movie of people that are unfamiliar with Firefly. And like you said, to go backwards. But
well, I think that everything is set up there as far as... it just being a good compact movie on its own. We do understand somewhat about the Alliance. It's not there, you know, as it was in the show, obviously. But again, it's like what you said. It's all about running time, and for the time that we had, the bases were really covered well, I thought.
And I think, you know, we got a big arc of what the goal obvious was. The goal was to get to that planet to learn the secret, and then to get that secret exposed.
Right,
you know?
Right.
That could have been a whole season, too.
Oh, easily. Even though we don't have the time to investigate that and the intricacies of that, I still think that it was done in a grand way. I do feel like this movie had scale to it.
It definitely had good scale to it. And I think something that I kind of liked, and... I mean, this isn't necessarily slam movie stars, but it was just refreshing to just kick back and watch a movie of characters.
Right.
Not, you know, Matt Damon as Malcolm Reynolds and Ben Affleck as, you know, Jane. You know, it was just all these actors are unfamiliar enough probably to most people out there, especially people that don't know Firefly, to where they just are going to accept them as characters.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I kind of miss that in movies in some ways, you know, to where you don't know all the players, you just know them as their characters.
Well, Nathan Fillion is Malcolm Reynolds, and he will be known as Malcolm Reynolds, you know what I mean? The only reason that we know Harrison Ford more than anything than Han Solo is because he went and had a career afterwards, you know, which obviously is possible for Fillion. But I think now he is so tied to that role that you walk out of there saying, that was... Captain Reynolds. That wasn't someone playing Captain Reynolds. That was him. And I've heard Joss Whedon before said that these people were born to play these characters. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can't imagine anyone else playing these characters. You know, and let's say, you know, movies continue to get made and whatnot, and, you know, they want to keep certain characters and they want to, you know, replace them. I don't think that would be possible.
No, it wouldn't even be, you know, necessary in any way. I can't think of a reason. I mean, for a $42 to $45 million film, it looked terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, considering that this summer we saw movies in the $150 million range, and then we're looking at this one.
Nearly as creative.
It's not as creative. Well, they didn't have anything to prove. And Joss had a lot riding on this movie. He had the life of this series that he loves and that the cast loves, and that millions of fans have taken to and built this massive underground movement in promoting. All of that was on the line here, and so I think there was a lot. Plus, it's, you know, what we're forgetting is this is really his first film. I mean, he's mm-hmm. written films. He's been nominated for Oscars for the screenplay for Toy Story and whatnot. But mm-hmm. we forget that this is his first motion picture.
How do you think he did as director, not screenwriter?
As director, I think he did great. I mean, obviously, I got to tell you, I got lost in it. And my eyes are not very clear. And maybe on the second or third viewing, I'll be able to get in there and really technically look at it. But, I mean, I have no qualms with anybody, especially, you know, acting on the level of the operative guy. You know what I mean? The bad guy.
I think all the actors, you know, turned in really, really good performances. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Josh's handling of the scenes was nice because there wasn't a necessarily look at me, ma, show off equality to any of it. It was just, you know, down and dirty, good filmmaking, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Some of the techniques from the show I kind of missed in the beginning from the outer space scenes, the sort of the documentary feel, but it came back later on mm-hmm. in the later half of the movie, I noticed. But I also kind of missed where they take all the sound effects out of the space scenes. It really is a movie complete with sound effects, you know, from wall to wall. That was always a unique aspect of the show, is the fact that the outer space scenes contain no sound of spaceships.
Well, what I had heard is that, you know, when they get close to atmosphere, you hear some sounds. But mm-hmm. when they're in deep space, you don't hear any. And I noticed an instance of that when they were in deeper space.
Right, because you have the music going. And it's nice because, you know, you do have the music.
Right.
You know, to accompany it, or, you know, a sort of an intercom or voiceover.
Right.
But it just didn't jump out at me the way the show made it jump out.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Well, and I think there's so many other things to look at. I think that as a fan of the show, we finally get a fill of the Reavers, man. We got a mouthful of Reavers. I mean, these guys are the Borg, basically, of this show. And, boy, we got a mouthful of them guys, and that was just fantastic, because that was something I was always wanting for. So I think there was so many things that we were wanting for as fans that never really got brought full circle.
They finally paid off River, too, from the one moment in the episode where she picks up a gun and, you know, expertly marks, you know, three guys and kills them all.
Right.
But we never really saw a continuation of that thread.
Right.
So we finally get to see the evolution of, you know, what she is.
Right.
Didn't really have any gunplay in the movie, did she? It was all just physical.
She had a gun a little bit. It was so killer when Malcolm was talking to her and she was holding the gun on him.
It was great.
He's like, or we can, you know, you're just going to have to shoot me, or we can talk about mm-hmm. it some more.
Yeah, all the humor that I really enjoyed from the show was certainly carried over, and very welcome.
Definitely.
Worked well. And, I mean, from Josh Whedon, from a filmmaking point, there was a couple of things that I thought kind of jumped out at me, mm-hmm. Because most of the film is sort of seamless and very polished. And then there's a scene where, you know, Malcolm and Jane are getting into it, and Jane calls him on, you know, the people he left behind during war.
Right.
And there's an out-of-focus shot of Zoe, and it slowly goes into focus.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting. You know, I don't know. It kind of jumped out from the rest of the
picture. Did you like it or not like it? I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it.
Because it was coming into focus. They're saying, you better get out of this room.
And, you know, I don't mind having a slow beat every now and then in a movie.
Right.
You know, let it breathe for just a second. Another one happened where, and the movie didn't really establish this a lot, but was when Malcolm was talking with Book. And there's just a moment where suddenly it flashes to Malcolm looking in on River when she's handcuffed, and then back to them talking.
Right.
I mean, that's an easy flash memory device, but it really wasn't used that often in the film. It just kind of was used there, except for the character River, mm-hmm. where it was, you know, a little bit more appropriate. But little things like that seem like an idea just to throw in, you know, just to experiment with. And, you know, I don't mind that. It's just, it's interesting how things like that, you know, can get incorporated. And I think, you know, the more film, you know, the next film he directs, it'll be curious to see where he takes it further. But no, I think he handled it well. I mean, there was, it was nice, lean, economic filmmaking, and I thought it worked.
Well, it was lean, but it also, like I said earlier, there was scale to it. I mean, I didn't feel like, you know, when we have the horde of Reaver ships coming out of the cloud, I mean, whew.
Yeah, you know, it looked great.
I almost, I had seen that in the trailer. I didn't know they were Reavers, though, which made it even cooler. So, you know, and there's just so many little things. And I don't want to spoil things for anybody, but, you know, it's not just that there was action and character, but there were some surprises and some absolute heartbreaking surprises for people who know this show.
Well, we could talk about it because people are probably listening to this podcast have seen the movie.
Well,
right?
I don't know. And we're doing it so quick afterwards. Maybe we should just hold off a little bit. But let's just say this is that at the end of the show, and, you know, this probably isn't giving away too much. You're going to see a funeral scene. Okay. You're going to see a little cemetery scene. And boy, I didn't see it coming. And I'm glad I didn't see it coming. And it hit me big time, mainly because I had the backstory of the series. I knew some of these characters. You know what I mean? And it's not just ancillary characters. It's not just side characters. It's main characters here.
Well, we're talking, the show starts with an ensemble of 9 characters.
Right.
And moving on now, we have 7.
Yeah. And so and that's huge. That was huge. Well, and I had heard Josh talking about movies are very different than TV series. You have to say in a film that this is a big jumping off point here. There's something different about a film than a series. And remember, going back to Star Trek, especially in the Next Generation films, one of our biggest complaints was that this was nothing more than an episode of the show, just to a grander scale, especially with
Insurrection.
Insurrection, exactly. And that was the worst. And I think he realized that. He knew that you got to make these things big. You know, the arc that they had with Star Trek 2, 3, and 4. You know what I mean? I mean, I think he inherently understands that and says, this has got to be something more. And we're not in la-la land here of stormtroopers who can't shoot for crap. This is the real world with real guns and real bullets. You know, and it's not a safety zone place, and it's not just guaranteed that everyone's going to walk out. And that definitely added a level of believability to it. As much as Firefly fans are going to be wiped out by it, I think that it gives something deeper to it. You know what I mean?
And again, Firefly fans who, you know, might be hit by that or are taken aback by it or even might feel negative toward it need to look to the bigger picture here. There's a bigger story being told. You know, if it holds true that Josh Whedon designed a 7-season arc for this show when he set out to make it, you know, in this film, I don't know where this film follows, you know, the arc, but it certainly covers at least a season's worth of material, you know, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's certainly, I think he can cram more into at least 2 other films if it is going to be 3. Which seems to be the trendy thing to do nowadays, right?
Right. Well, everyone always
you do the 3.
Everyone always thinks in 3s. There's been also a lot of talk that people saying, "Well, if this is successful, maybe it could go back to television." But I think it's beyond that now. I mean, now that I've seen it, before I was saying, "Yeah, it'd be great to get this back on TV." To put this thing back into the small box of television to me would be bizarre, because now you could never do things on the grand scale like we've done in the film now. And I just think that wouldn't make a lot of sense. And I'd like to keep it on the grand scale.
Well, you know, there's plus and minuses. You know, I'd like to keep it on the grand scale too, but I'd like to add about 25 minutes running time to the movie.
Sure.
The advantage of the show is you get to care about characters like Kaylee, you know, and Inara. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, they're great in the movie, but you don't really get a lot about them, you know. And, you know, we just have to rely on the fact that we know them and understand them. But strictly in a feature film, you know, it'll be nice that if there's a little bit more time to flesh out the character parts while it keeps on its momentum of the journey, you know, and the adventure and the mission and what needs to be accomplished. Because I think, you know, the balance was right for this film, you know. It needs to maintain a certain pace and a certain purpose. And I think, you know, if you connect the dots of the screenplay, it works out beautifully on, you know, the way the adventure starts out and how it moves from one, you know, position to another.
Now, I had mentioned this before, back when I first started watching Firefly, and I wanted to mention it here, was, and I visually thought about this after seeing the show, is, you know, let's flash back to that funeral scene where we see those gravestones, you know, and just, you know, figuratively, the way that I look at this next idea is that it's almost like there's another tombstone there, okay? And on that tombstone, it should say Star Trek. Okay? Now, for me to say that is huge because I love Star Trek. Okay? I love it all. But you know what? Back when I first started my blog, before we had a podcast, before anything, I did, and it was one of my first write-ups. I think it was like in July or something. And I said, this is where Star Trek should have gone and didn't. And I'm telling you, they're going to spend years catching up to it. Because it's sad because now there's a new standard set. Now, obviously, if it's not popular and it doesn't make a lot of money, you know, I could be wrong. Because Hollywood's going to look at it and say, where can we take this thing based on how much money it's made? But for how crews work, you know, it's an ensemble piece like Star Trek. There's obviously Star Trek elements here. We have a doctor. We have a captain.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? We have an engineer. Had Star Trek not happened before, we would not have Firefly. It's almost like a commentary on Star Trek and where Star Trek went wrong. And it's saying, and it's the flip side of Star Trek saying, oh yeah, well, you know, as the Enterprise was flying by on its way to save, you know, a galaxy, Serenity kind of snuck by on the side, you know what I mean, on their way to rob a train station on a small backwoods planet. You know what I mean? That's the statement. Instead of going so macro, we're going micro. You know what I mean? And we're seeing regular people dealing with regular, you know, with outstanding situations. And, you know, they're not so noble. You know, it's more about, whereas in Star Trek, it was about, you know, what was the saying that Kirk and Spock was all about? You know, sometimes the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many, or sometimes the many outweigh the needs of the one. And that was the big saying. Well, mm-hmm. You know, and they had flipped that in the show. Whereas at first when Spock died, he said the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. And what you're seeing in this is the flip side of that. The needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many, because you know what, if you're a part of that Firefly crew, of that Serenity crew, you're in there and Mal's going to take care of you. You know what I mean? It starts with them and their little family and their his protection over them. And then it goes macro with the signal and what the signal is all about. And we got to get the signal out. You know what I mean? But if he inherently didn't have his family to save first, you know, he'd be Snake Plissken, you know, mm-hmm. He doesn't care. Although he wants to do anything he can to stick it to the Alliance. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more about saying, look around you and what's around you and not so big. And Star Trek was so big and Firefly or / Serenity is so small. And then that's where it gets personal. You get all those interpersonal workings. And it's just a whole different thing. And I think that it's, you know, that's the thing that Star Trek needed. They needed to reinvent itself. Well, Star Trek has just reinvented itself, but it's a whole different show and it's called Serenity. You know, and I think that they're going to have to hire some very, very talented people if they want to save Star Trek at this point. Because if this thing becomes the touchstone, if this movie is popular, it's going to be real hard for Star Trek to come back.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. You know, I don't know what the future holds for Star Trek, but certainly some new blood into the franchise is essential. You know,
oh, it's got
to
be.
They need to go find their Christopher Nolan. And figure out how they're going to reinvent themselves.
Well, they're going to have to get somebody in there and be brave. Not that I hated Nemesis. I didn't hate Nemesis. I love Captain Picard. But what I'm saying is that when they started talking about reinvention and Enterprise, I didn't have anything to do with. I will watch it eventually. But, mm-hmm. You know, the episodes I tried, it was just, okay, we've been here 16 times already. Please stop hammering this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And what they needed to do was take a few years off, reinvent it, and then bring a new series. And really, the reaction to that was Firefly. And that was the way that Star Trek should have gone. And it's sad to me that they didn't try to go that way. But I'm happy as hell that we didn't have to keep, you know, fighting on that realm. We got a whole new thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's so many more places that this show can go. You know, there's so many more things. I mean, listen to the end where he says, you know, we're coming out of the storm. mm-hmm. you know, or we'll get through it. You know, I mean, that was so metaphoric for.
It was a nice touch
for everything, and
you know, I mean, certainly, the next chapter, we need more on the Alliance. You know, we need to get inside. We need to know how it works. We need to know who's running the Alliance. You know, I need to know. I mean, you know, again, and I'm just talking about for people that are just coming to the big screen, you know, there's a lot of information we need to fill them in on,
right.
I think, in the next film to keep it on that size and scale.
Well, there's going to have to be somewhat of a reinvention when it comes to the next film because it can't always be that they're after River. You know what I mean? And to a certain extent, that's going to be alleviated at the end of this film because that's really what the basis was for Firefly. The series was this whole question of who is River, and they're coming mm-hmm. after River, and we're running away from the people coming after River, you know.
Sure.
And they would have gone way deeper into that with the Blue Sun and with you know 2x2 Hands of Blue and all that kind of stuff. I noticed that they weren't wearing blue gloves, and maybe that's just because they were Alliance and not Blue Sun, but obviously they would have gone further and deeper than that in the series, and they didn't. You know, I mean, it probably would have been a sidetrack here in this film to not do anything but streamline that kind of stuff.
Well, you have different agendas, you know. Fortunately for us, we had about a good 10 hours of storytelling before
right.
we saw this movie.
Right.
And, you know, a regular series can get about 17 hours in if they go 22 episodes.
Right.
So there's a lot you can do, you know, and if you have a strong ensemble, like most great shows do, that's how you survive, you know. And having that forward momentum of being on the run with River was going to keep that show running for years.
Was there nothing cooler than taking a room, filling it up with Reavers, and then her saying, "My turn"? Okay? How sneaking cool was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess she can control it. She can turn it on, turn it off anytime she wants.
Well, you know, I didn't think that was the case, but I think at okay. that point she got to a perspective where it was life or death.
Okay.
You know,
because I'm a little unsure about that. I don't think the series or the movies really quite told me how it works with her. I mean, I know how to turn it off now.
Right.
That was made clear.
Right.
But I don't, because you got to remember in the series when Kaylee was in trouble, she just suddenly grabbed the gun and then boom, 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 you know. But in the movie, something triggered her in the bar.
Well, the whole Miranda thing,
right.
I think, really shook her up. And it could be that opened up a new wrinkle.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That set her off, because obviously it set her off in the bar.
Right.
You know,
but
once they got past that, maybe there was a level of consciousness that was cleared in her mind to where maybe she didn't have the you know, she wasn't sure she could do it, but obviously at the end, you know, that wasn't the story.
And I think it's a good choice to make her sort of unsettling, because we, the audience, we don't really know,
right,
you know.
Right.
She can go off at any time. And I found the series, a lot of times, you know, she would go through a lot of tantrums and just sort of disturbing episodes
mm-hmm.
that really made her character very uneasy,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
not only to the characters in the show, but also watching it, you know.
Sure.
It really kept you on your toes because mm-hmm. you really weren't sure where it could go. And I like that. I think that's good.
Well, either way you look at it, it's a great character. And I think that they definitely moved it over from the series to the film very well. I think maybe some of the smaller characters, I would have loved to have seen more of Jane's lines, you know what I mean? Because he's such a fun part of, the TV show.
Even Zoe, you know, unfortunately, you know, I mean, because the movie has got to be focused on, you know, its plot and its thread,
right.
you know, we don't get all those things that TV shows do so well.
Right, and I think... if you have to crush in a whole season of TV shows into one show, obviously you've got to give yourself a main character, and that obviously is the captain. And you've
right.
got to give yourself an enemy, and you know,
and you've got to give yourself
supporting
a purpose, and the purpose is River.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, if you got to crush all that in, he did a great job of doing it.
Oh, he did. He did. And I mean, based on the restrictions of making a feature film, which is you need to make a two-hour movie. It's, what, about 116 minutes or so?
Yeah, I didn't
know. You know, give or take. Yeah. Now, if they'd have told him, Josh, we're going to let you make a two-and-a-half-hour movie, he'd make completely different choices.
Sure.
But knowing you got to make a two-hour movie means you got to use that phrase that's very famous for a lot of writers, you got to kill your darlings. You know?
Right.
All those little things that you love, which usually end up being character moments, usually are the first things to go. Because, you know, they get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I like movies that can take time to do that, but in today's sort of, you know, compartmentalized release of a movie to a theater,
mm-hmm.
you have those restrictions.
Well, you know what's interesting is that going back to our previous episode about McMovies, I think this is such a great thing to see. To throw in the face of McMovies, because, you know, the answer is not someone like Brett Ratner
mm-hmm.
and these other guys who can just plug in. What the answer is to find someone like Joss Whedon. It's to take the time. It's to find someone like Christopher Nolan. It's to find, you know, these young, talented guys. Well, I mean, they're not that young, but these guys who don't have a huge track record in film, give him that shot. And either they're going to win or they're going to lose. But you're not just making product, you know. If this film was just product, it would fail miserably. But there's a heart behind this thing, and it's obvious.
You know, talent and passion combined with a budget can do a lot for a movie.
Yeah.
And here you have someone that's very passionate about the material, who's also talented and is giving enough money to fulfill it. And I think that's how good movies are made.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the difference between, like we were saying, this kind of film and a McMovie. And here's the really sad part, is that you could make 2.5 Serenities for one Fantastic Four. Okay?
You could do all three Serenities for one Fantastic Four.
That's right.
Shoot them all at the same time.
That's right. And yeah, back to back to back. And I guarantee you in 10 years... the movie that's going to hold up is Serenity and not Fantastic Four. The movie that's going to hold up is Serenity and not X3, okay? Yeah, I'm picking on it now, but you wait. You watch, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the difference. And, you know, does Hollywood not have, like, scouts? You know how baseball teams have scouts?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some scouts, you know? Let's go find these guys. Go to the internet. Find these filmmakers who are making these short films. You know, hell, I've seen better Star Wars fan films than some of the crap that's hitting the main theaters. You know what I mean? Let's find these guys. Let's hire John Jansen and give him a damn budget and let him go out there and make these films. You know, these guys don't need $150 million. But if you take a chance and you start them off on the farm league, you start them off in the minor leagues, give them, you know, $3 million. What is that? What is $3 million to 20th Century Fox? Okay? It's nothing.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, you're going to be putting enough very talented craftsmen around that person to ensure that their passion and their, you know, hopefully their talent can be fulfilled. You can do it with cinematographers and costume designers and editors. And every position you need, there are top people in Hollywood that can do it. You know, in Canada, in New York, they're everywhere, in Texas.
Well, you know what it is? Ultimately, it's fear. It's fear of the unknown. It's all driven by fear, like we said before.
Absolutely fear. Yeah.
You know, it's driven by fear. They're afraid to put this much money in someone's untested hands. Let me tell you something. In the music video world, when I was in there, okay, it wasn't so much that people were looking at my reel. It was that they were looking at who I had worked with. Well, who have you worked with? Well, I've worked with mm-hmm. some smaller groups that you might not have heard of. Oh, okay, yeah, whatever. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, in the commercial Whereas, world's like that. If you know, what commercial spots have you done? They don't want to look at them. Oh, you did Nike. We want you.
Right, and that's what it is. It's really about name, who you've worked with, and it's really like a catch-22. You know, someone somewhere has to give you a shot to get into those big name deals, but they're afraid as hell to give you a shot until you have something behind you. And so it's this terrible thing where people lucky enough like Ratner get locked in that loop because he was lucky enough to be friends with Chris Tucker and make Rush Hour, and then that was it, you know. And it was
Money Talks, actually.
It was, right. Well, then, well, the success of Rush Hour, though. And that was all that it took. You know what I mean?
Well, it makes me wonder if the old studio system wasn't really a bad idea, and I wonder if it could work again to where you just have a stable of directors, and they all do two or three pictures a year. Mm-hmm. You know, you keep them working. You shoot a picture, you edit it, you release it, and then you do another one, and you make that one better. I mean, you know, the John Fords and Howard Hawks, the reason they're as good as they are is they made more than 30 pictures. A lot of directors today might not make more than 5 pictures, you know, or 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the masters we have, you know, very few are over 20 pictures. I mean, Clint Eastwood has made more films than, you know, most other directors that have, you know, been around for 20, 30 years.
Well, and as with anything, the more you do, the more you learn, the better you get.
You are going to get better, inevitably, because, you know, filmmaking is a process of learning from your mistakes. You don't know what a film is going to look like until you shoot it and cut it together. And even then, you know, you still don't know what the final version is going to look like because you're going to have to, you know, always make changes.
Well, you know, and let's not forget where Joss Whedon came from. It's not like he's a brand new baby out of USC.
No,
okay? And I think he's got years he's got those years of television behind him. Same as J.J. Abrams. You know,
and they brought a very cinematic eye to television and their projects.
Right.
I certainly think he had all the chops necessarily to take on the film, and I think he certainly proved it. But, you know, just that kind of, you know, honing ground for younger filmmakers, you know, you just make more $5 million films, $10 million films, you know?
Right.
And, you know, yeah, you can churn them out. There's your assembly line. There's your product to fill. But still, you know, you gotta, it's all about just, you know, putting it out there and getting the audience, you know, interested in it. Now, I want to get a little nitpicky here because there's some elements that I don't think Universal did a very good job with the poster. Have you seen the poster?
The blue one? Kind of the blue one with Malcolm at the top?
It's Malcolm and her, you know, and River. And I just think that poster would not get me into the movie.
And why?
I mean, it's not an iconic poster. It's a throwaway poster. It looks like a video box. Star Wars has an iconic poster image.
Right.
Jaws, iconic poster image.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, iconic poster image. There's something about just, you know, because that's your advertising. I'm talking about how you're going to get newbies in. Not me, newbies. And a poster is an important thing. And I think poster art has gone down tremendously in the last 10, 15 years.
Right. Well, and I think that what you're seeing with how Serenity was promoted was a whole new thing. I mean, this is internet promotion. This is on the, you know, this is some very, you know, underground, grassroots type of thing.
Taking a very grassroots approach,
right?
Absolutely.
And I think that they probably expected that when people look at the poster, they know what they're looking at. You know what I mean? Knowing the show, I think it's a beautiful poster. Whether or not it sells good or not, I can't tell you. I would like to have it in my house just because I, you know, it's got Firefly on it. It's got
I wasn't
Captain
wild about that. I didn't think that the poster sold the movie that I saw today.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
It didn't sell the adventure, you know. It didn't sell the ensemble crew. It didn't sell the Firefly experience turned into a big screen movie.
Well, and I,
you know, whatever happened to those little boxes of all the other ensemble casts that they used to do in the 70s posters?
Mm-hmm.
So you would always see the entire cast, even if they weren't part of the artwork, you know, of the design. I just think that there's just a lot of other ways. And then when I was looking at the credits on the poster, I was really disappointed I didn't see all the names.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. But that's a complete package of a movie. If you're going to talk about a movie, you got to see all aspects of it, you know. And it's going to hurt them, I think, in trying to get a new audience in there. There's better ways to do it. Now, since I haven't watched the trailers, I don't know how well they're selling the film in the trailers. How do you think they're doing?
I just couldn't say. I think this movie is going to live or die on word of mouth. I think that this is the kind of movie that you could see making more money in 3 weeks than today, opening day. And the only reason I say that is because it's a different kind of thing. It was promoted a different kind of way. And I think that this thing is going to live or die on word of mouth. This thing is going to have a long, if it's going to be successful, it's going to have a longer life. And I think that, you know, it's still up in the air whether or not the uninitiated are going to come. Because the problem with Firefly has always, it's always been just getting people to sit down and watch it. It's never, ever been, you know, I watched it, I was kind of bored, I didn't like it. That's very rare. Everyone who I've talked to is like, oh yeah, I just haven't had time yet, it's been sitting around, I'll get to it eventually. And then once they do get to it, they're hooked. Okay, even I did that, you know. When I first got it on Netflix, it sat around for a week, you know, I'll get to it eventually. Had I known what I had in my hand, I would have been in there in the first hour, you know. And I think that's the problem, is that people just don't know. It's almost like a food that you have to taste to know if you're going to want to eat some more. It's
well,
not
the question
just that you
I
know.
Think people out there need to ask themselves are what kind of movies do they like? Do they like science fiction adventure movies? If that answers yes, then this is for you.
Right.
You know, you didn't know all the characters going into Independence Day, and a lot of people went and saw that movie and turned it into a blockbuster.
Right.
And you know what? It's not a very good movie.
Exactly. Well, see, I guess that's the question.
It has scale. It certainly has scale,
sure,
to it, but it's
sure.
not a very good movie.
Sure. Well, and the question is does it stand up on its own as a film, erase Firefly from the picture? Does it stand up?
Will it entertain you? Will it make you laugh? Will it, right. Does it carry emotions that are true and not just, you know,
right.
hacking?
Right.
Interesting characters? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. All, you know, I think it's got a good villain. It's got a great hero or anti-hero, however you want to look at him. And, you know, I think a wonderful cast as well, backing it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's hard for me to say. I know Firefly well. I've probably seen the series all the way through 3 times. So I'm initiated. I'm in the brown coat area. So I don't know. All I can tell you is that I had expectations. And when I go into a film I've been excited about and waiting for, I have higher expectations because I have a desired level that I want to reach. You know, I wanted to see Serenity, you know, pass by the screen slowly with the old Western type orchestral score going, you know, and all that flavor that it had been in the show. And you know what? I got more than I had wanted. It met my expectations. And for that to happen for me is just such a joy to go out to a film and to have that. Is it a geek thing? Absolutely. That's fine. I don't care. Label it that if you want. I think I would definitely I'll recommend it to everybody, including those who haven't seen the show. But I would also say, if you want a full meal, if you want the whole package, watch Firefly first. I mean, I hate saying that because I definitely want people to support this movie so that there's more life to it. And I know that everyone, studio-wise, especially Universal, is going to be looking at these opening weekends and saying, you know, it does this thing.
They're looking
have
at
a
the
life.
Numbers as we speak. Are you kidding?
Sure. And what did they predict on Box Office Mojo? 16?
Okay.
16 million? Okay. I think it can go higher than that. But I really have hopes. I think I had read somewhere that someone said if it can make 60 million worldwide, then they'll get right into making the next film. And I don't think that's too much of a stretch for this movie. I think this movie, when I saw this movie, I said, this is a $200 million film.
Well, I think it'll certainly do better overseas, probably, because they're a lot more open to things.
Yeah.
As moviegoers and American audiences are.
I think the word of mouth.
It's the nature of the game.
I think the word of mouth can propel this thing. I think it's going to get people in there. I think all the people that stayed away from the last few Star Trek movies are going to go see this movie. They can get into these characters. They're real.
Was your screening packed?
My screening at noon on a weekday was pretty packed. And let me tell you something, man. Oh, and it's so nice for a change. I went in and no one was talking and the sound was good.
Yeah.
Man, whew. I was, and you know, I really needed that because I was so ready to just ban, you know, the movies, you know. And I was sitting there and there was a guy during the trailers, you know, blah, 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 talking on his cell phone. And I wanted to reach around and go, just for the love of God, please only do it during the trailers. Talk your ass off during the trailers, but leave my movie alone. But that didn't happen. And I got a good screening and I walked away shocked. You know, the film looked good. The audio was loud. Nobody talked.
Yeah, I was at a 5:10 screening, packed. And when I walked out, there was a line all the way around the theater.
That's great. That's great news. But,
you know, that's California. People go to the movies in California.
Well, that's great.
On Friday and Saturday nights.
That's great news. And that really excites me. And I just hope that this movie can catch on to people, can catch their hearts. And because I think this is the next Star Trek. This is the next movie series that's going to propel us through the next decade. I think this thing has a future life to it, and it's going to give all this cast new, great opportunities like they deserve, and I'm really excited about it. So, anyways, wrapping it all up in our little review, and you know what? We hate doing reviews, okay? We've talked about this. But every now and then, folks, we're going to have to do some reviews because... You know, we can't stay out of the movie theaters, and when we see certain movies, we're going to have to talk about them. We like talking about topics, not always just pushing product, because, you know, you got enough of that on other podcasts, and we don't want to just be like everybody
else.
Well,
there's plenty of people out there giving reviews.
There's plenty of reviews, and, you know, but we had to do this because it just had to be done. But, hey, I'm going to go out and be... You know, I need to have a bad movie every now and then so I don't sound like such a pushover. But as far as Serenity goes, I'm going 4 guns.
I think I'm going to give Serenity 3.5 gunshots.
This Old Testament, Mr.
Yes.
Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Exactly.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.
Podcast411.com. Listen different.
Hey, here's a magic message. Read it and pass it on.
From tech news to interviews, Rob from podcast411.com has been called the Terry Gross of podcasting.
And talking of today, why don't we go ahead and get into this interview now with CC Chapman. Here we go.
We're going to go ahead now and get into the interview with Scott from Earthcore Podcast.
Chris Rockwell for the Daily Download. On today's show, very excited to have as our guest, none other than the Podfather himself, Adam Curry. Well, that concludes our interview with Walt and Katie from the Wall Street Journal.
The best place to find new podcasts and insights from podcast pioneers, podcast411.com.
This podcast is proudly listed on podcastpickle.com with more features for podcasters and listeners. Truly the best podcasting directory on the internet.
Okay, everybody, this is Andy wrapping up our Chasing Serenity episode. I want to say that tonight is actually Monday night as I'm wrapping this up, October 3rd. And, I got a chance to look at the box office returns from this weekend for Serenity. And yeah, I'm a little disappointed to say that it only made $10 million and it came in second place behind Flight Plan. So, in as much as I hate to, you know, throw doom over something because of simple box office, that's a little discouraging. I thought that, you know, there was enough fan base behind the film to at least get a $20 million opening, which would have been really good for the future of the series. So right now it's up in the air. And there's some people who have said, you know, hey, that's it. It's over. And I can't buy that yet. We got to see. I did read an article that said that Joss Whedon had said the second weekend is going to tell the tale. And that'll be interesting because then we'll see the word of mouth start to go. And if this film is going to have legs, we should start seeing it real soon. If not, you know, it could be the end. I really hope not, because this is a great show, and I think that if people could, we could just get people in there, It would be exciting. And there may be a backlash against all this kind of stuff that people just say, hey, I'm sick of hearing it. Quit trying to force it down my throat. But from people trying to push it, all I can do is say, hey, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And if you are not interested in serenity, that's fine. But I think you're missing out on something. But hopefully we can get that audience up and get those dollars up. But anyways, as usual, I want to wrap up the show. You can always come and visit us at the website at www.hollywoodsaloon.com. You can email us at hollywoodsaloon@yahoo.com. You need to come by the website and click on the forum link there, because we got a great discussion forum going on. We got a lot of good topics up. We're talking about movies. Of course, we're talking about Firefly. We're talking about Serenity. We're talking about the new TV season, what's going on Alias and other shows. And so we're having a great time there. So you're really missing out. Come by and register and sign up and get into the discussion with us, because we're having some good stuff, some good, interesting conversation. So I wanted to mention it's the beginning of the month. And for all podcasters, that means that's when they change out all the votes on Podcast Alley. And, you know, we want to get up in those ranks. And I had told everyone before that my goal was to get into the top 10 of the movies and films category. And we've done that now. And we crossed over. We got to number 8 earlier today. And right now we're sitting at number 9 in the movies and films category. And that's out of a total of 199 shows. So that's pretty exciting. You know, it's kind of like a deal where one vote will make it, you know, will raise you up or lower you a level. So so it's kind of tight. I can tell you that out of 7,539 shows completely, in total, we're at number 101. And that just is really fantastic. I'm excited about it. We need more and more votes. I know that some of these top shows get thousands of votes. But, you know, every little vote counts. And believe me, every little vote counts. And if you're a listener to this show, please, by all means, we would really appreciate it if you head over to Podcast Alley and put a vote in there. And we can tell you more how to do that at our website. Probably the best way for you to get the best information about Hollywood Saloon is to register for our newsletter. And you can do that by going to our website, www.hollywoodsaloon.com. Look at the bottom of the screen. Just scroll down, and you'll see a place where you can put in your email address, hit submit, and you're signed up. Whenever we send out a new newsletter, you'll get it. Thanks again for listening to this kind of special edition. It's, you know, movie review show for Serenity. Please, by all means, get out there and support the movie. We're behind it 100%. We want to see it continue. We want to see more stories for the crew of Serenity. And, you know, we'll be able to tell the tale pretty soon. And we'll see how it goes and what the future holds. Thank you again for listening as usual, and we will see you next time.
Rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen, keep them doggies rolling rawhide. Rain and wind and weather, hell bent for leather, wishing my gal was by my side. All the things I'm missing, good victuals, love and kissing, waiting at the end of my ride.
Move them on,
hit them up,
hit them up,
move them on,
move them on,
hit them up,
rawhide,
cut them out,
ride them in,
ride them in,
cut them out,
cut them out,
ride them in, rawhide.
You're listening to the Hollywood Saloon.